everybody. Hope you had a good Christmas. This is Kudzu Killers, and thanks for coming back. I just want to take a couple seconds to remind you of our little pet project this holiday season, and that's the food banks in your local area. They're running low, guys, because of the hardship this year from COVID and people being laid off or not having a job or whatever. So they could really use some donations. And I don't know about you, Lark, but I just go by Aldi every once in a while, maybe once a month, and load up a couple bags because you can get veggies for like 49 cents a can and they're good. And you can get mac and cheese, 3 boxes for $1. And so I just go and load up on, you know, non-perishable food items, including some puppy stuff like treats or dog food, bag of dog food, and take it by our local food bank. If you can do that, great. Do that and be blessed for doing something good for people.
Because, you know, me and Kim believe, you know, what goes around comes around, and karma and all that good stuff, and our not to. And we're going to actually talk about that a whole lot more on our new paranormal show that's coming up.
That's right.
Yeah. In the
January, y'all be on the lookout for the start date.
Because the big 2021. Exactly. So we've got something very exciting for y'all. And just keep in mind, karma, karma, karma. Every time you reach for that box of macaroni cheese, karma. Okay. So, I have the most creepy story today. Oh, maybe it's not totally creepy, but it involves some of our fave things like, let's see, necrophilia and, fetishes and high heels and women's clothing. So
lovely.
Do you think you know who we're going to talk about today, Kim?
No, I don't. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, this guy's name is Jerome Brudos, and we'll call him Jerry, okay?
Jerome.
Okay. Yeah.
And he likes high heels and a bra.
Just like
his dear papa.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay.
That's right.
If y'all don't know what that is, you need to get with some
watch old Monty Python, guys.
Yeah. Y'all need to find your sense of humor. So here we go. Jerry was born on January the 31st in 1939 in the small town of Webster, South Dakota. Now, his family moved often when he was a boy, bouncing between California, Oregon, and South Dakota. His childhood was neither happy or stable, as his mother, Eileen, desperately wanted a girl.
Yeah,
see where we're going here?
I'm going to tell you guys a little something about my family.
Uh-oh.
Don't judge me from this.
What?
But my uncle and his wife had 7 kids. By the time they got to the 6th one, she was convinced she would never have a girl. They were all boys.
Oh.
The first 5 were boys.
Aww.
And so that 6th one, she grew his hair out long and used to dress him in dresses and say he was a girl.
Aw. Well, now, how did he turn out?
He's the sweetest guy. He really is. He used to work with horses and, yeah, but, you know.
He's not a serial killer.
He's not a serial killer that I know of.
But,
you know, sometimes you discover stuff with that ancestry DNA that you just don't want to know. But anyway.
Well, you know what? I'm betting that your auntie wasn't cruel to him either. I mean.
Well, she passed away. She drowned, actually. They were all out in a boat, and it tipped over, and she drowned while she was trying to pull the kids out of the water.
So that was the end of your cousin wearing dresses and high heels.
Well, actually, it had ended a little before then because she finally, on the 7th kid, had a girl.
Oh, yay. 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 Well, you know, believe it or not, I've heard stories about this from not in my family, but in like the local tiny little town of LaGrange, where my family comes from. And yeah, there was someone in that town that she wanted a girl, so she didn't have one. So
I guess that was kind of common back then. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think crazy has any definition, but, you know, some people are just, I don't know. Well, you know, way, way back in, way back in the 17th, 16th centuries, they were all dressed up as the little boys always wore dresses.
Yeah.
You know exactly. What? Come to think of it, I have a picture of my grandfather in a dress.
Well, yeah, they didn't think of them. They didn't think of them that way back then. They were just clothes.
Now, I should qualify that he was probably 6 months old. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
He wasn't a full grown man. But okay, let's go back to our, we're totally getting off this subject.
Sorry, I got off on a tangent with my family.
Let's go back to our Jerome Brutus, our Jerry. So remember, his mama wanted a girl. Yeah. And but she was so desperate about it that she was very cruel and emasculating with constant scolding and chastising. She was just heartbroken and actually furious that Jerry had not been born a girl. So,
jeez.
Yeah, she was
beat
mad.
Beat up on your husband for that. Don't beat up on
the kid. Yeah, I mean, it's all down
it's his fault.
Exactly. I mean, that's why he's throwing boys. It's, you know, I don't know what to say. But anyhow, so she would dress him in, as a girl to humiliate him, not to just pretend he was her doll.
Right.
She had a whole different reason. And so she was taking her sadness, anger out on him. And now, he was the second of two boys, and this long term, he really suffered from this devastating relationship with his mom. Not like we haven't seen this before. Hmm? Psychiatrists examining him later in life really believe that his violent fantasies revolved around this desperate wish to take revenge on his mother.
Well, you know what Freud says? It all boils down to the mommy.
Apparently, you know, because here we go. Is it nurture? Is it nature? I mean, what, you know? So in 1931, which is 2 years before the Depression came to an end in the United States, work was really hard to find at that time. And his father couldn't keep a job. So they continued to move around a lot. And Jerry went to several different schools as he was growing up, and he was bullied and never really fit into schools because, you know, everybody picks on the new kid, right? It's just the way it goes. So his father was trying to support the family, but at the same time, this also kept him away from home and the family. And basically, this put Jerry into exclusive care of his mom. Scary, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If so, she's that crazy.
Oh, it's about to get worse. So, lacking a father figure, he was for the most part with his prudish, no-nonsense mom, Eileen, who was prone to emotional tirades also. So, mommy probably needed a little drink in the afternoon, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. She needed her hot toddy.
She needed, yeah. She needed a little helper. So. Anyway, so she seemed to actually enjoy punishing him, but that's kind of another story. And at 5 years old, he found a pair of patent leather, open-toed, high-heels shoes in the dump. And he brought them home. So this was a real turning point for him in his psyche, because not just because he was fascinated by playing with them, but because of his mother's reaction. His mom saw it and freaked. And she made him promise to stop playing with him. And, you know, he didn't really understand this over-the-top reaction. And the shoes kind of became taboo, you know?
Right.
It's like, don't touch that stove. Touch, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure he didn't get why she was freaking out, since, I mean, gee whiz, she's been dressing like a girl all along. So
exactly.
Got shoes on. What's the problem?
Hello.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, he was 5 years old. I'm sure he didn't really even realize the difference at this point. You know, I mean, kids play a dress up all the time. So what?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But she was so adamant that he didn't have them, and he continued to berate him emotionally about it. So he kept the shoes, and he kept playing with them in secret. Well,
start him off making him hide it. That's good. That's always a good thing.
But when she found out that he'd been hiding them from her and disobeyed her, she became unhinged. Unhinged,
really?
Girl. Mm-hmm. She was so outraged that she took him outside and burned the shoes in front of him.
Oh.
Stood there and made him watch.
What a hateful witch.
I mean, really? And what? I just, you know, there's no logic to some people.
I mean, if you're that bent about it, throw them out and say, I don't know where they went.
Well, she wanted to teach him a lesson. You know, he disobeyed her. This was a lesson. So the message in his little mind is she's just extremely disapproves of him. You know, that's wrong. It's nasty. It's dirty, you know?
Right.
So all these emotions for this little guy, these really fueled the flame for him to start to feel powerless and vulnerable, right?
And that's never a good thing.
Oh, no. And that combined with his anger and his frustration led to a path of serious destruction down the line. So, as one might expect, footwear, specifically women's footwear, became the focus of his emerging sexuality. He started to associate sexual arousal with aggressiveness and the forbidden aspect of the shoes and the shame. This combination blossomed into a very strong fetish. So what could not be destroyed was his growing fascination with women, their shoes, and his festering, dark, violent fantasies about both.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He probably wants to kill mommy, you know. Well, he hates mommy now. She got rid of his black patent leather pumps.
Oh, yeah. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah.
I'd want to kill you, too, if you got rid of my black patent leather pumps.
I'd be a little annoyed if you got rid of them. I was annoyed when my mom melted my records because she was sick of me playing them over and over and over again.
Our mamas do things on the sly.
I'm sure you didn't open those curtains in the basement and melt my records on purpose or anything, I'm sure.
We know that Miss Cannon is not near that covert. She is a loving, wonderful, sweet lady that we adore.
She is who melted my 45.
Oh,
I would have probably done the same thing as many times as I played him. But anyway, I digress. Let's get on.
I just remember hearing somebody, we won't mention names, who said, if I ever have to watch Finding Nemo again, I might have to die. So there. Yeah. So do you have
shred the DVD. Yes, I remember.
So don't be hating on your mama and her tactics, okay?
Oh, I totally understand her. Don't get me wrong.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, so meanwhile. So
sorry, y'all. I'm just in a weird mood today. So
our little guy goes on. No worries, we're always weird, but long as y'all can roll with our weird, it's cool. So our little guy goes on to reportedly steal a pair of the high heels from his first grade teacher. Ooh.
Ooh, bad boy.
Yeah, well, okay. Fast forward to 16 years old. He starts to steal the neighbor's panties and lingerie.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I actually have a friend in college who was very annoyed when someone stole all her panties out of the... I'm like, just don't think about it. Keep moving.
Well, you know, I had that burglar who went through my panties and,
you know. I know.
It's creepy, y'all. Don't do that.
Yeah, it is creepy. Yeah. So meanwhile, okay, back to our, he's 16 year old. He's stealing neighbor's panties and lingerie. So when the neighbors started to report the thefts, he saw this as an opportunity to go over and talk to one of the girls about the crime. Hey, you know, what's going on? What do you think about the news and such, right? So one of the little girls let him in the house. And when she did, he forced her to undress at knife point and took pictures of her.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. But she didn't report him. I think she was really scared. So he got away with it.
So, of course he did. They always do.
Yeah. Well, got away with it. So that makes him to become more daring and more bold, right? So
confident.
Yeah. Later, while he was giving another girl a ride home one day, he stopped at a deserted farm and ordered her to strip. When she refused, he became enraged and he takes it out on her. He starts to get really pissed and he starts to beat her. A couple driving by sees the struggle and calls the police. So he's actually arrested and he confesses. So y'all are going to see that there are several moments when this all could have stopped, you know? It could have really never have started because of his mom being such a bee, right? So the couple sees him and he gets arrested. He confesses. And they also find all of his stolen shoes and the stolen underwear in the picture. So the police are kind of concerned at this point. Yeah. They're a little concerned. And so while you think this might nip all this in the bud, so to speak, you'd be wrong, because authorities sent him to the Oregon State Psychiatric Hospital for evaluation. Now, let me just comment, because Kim and I like to give you our little movie references, right? That this is the actual hospital where they made the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson. Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. It's the exact building he was in.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's big and it's creepy, y'all. He began to tell the doctors of his twisted fantasies. And here's what he wanted. He envisioned an underground prison where he could stash these captured girls so that he could go by whichever cell he wanted and just pull out certain girls whenever he wanted to, right?
No, goody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a plan.
Now, what makes this worse is, get this, these fantasies didn't alarm his doctors. What the what? They actually ended up letting him go to school during the day and coming back to the hospital at night.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. He ultimately graduated high school in 1957 and became an electronics engineer. So he was really good with electrical stuff and had a good tendency towards that. That's how his brain worked.
So he was smart. He was a smart guy. They always are. Yeah.
That he was smart, but he thought he was, you know, smarter than everybody. And he purported to have 165 IQ, but I don't think that's true. That's just, you know, I think
that's
pretty
high.
Yeah. I think he made that up.
That's like
beyond genius. Yeah. I think isn't 140 like considered genius? I don't know. I'm sure he just made it up.
Inflated numbers.
So anyway,
that's 10 inches, so, you know.
You said that, not me. Oh my God.
Guys aren't good with numbers sometimes.
Oh my God. She's always fussing me. She said that. Anyway, so the psychiatrist decided that he wasn't suffering from anything permanent and decided that this was a phase, that he'd grow out of it.
Oh, please.
Yeah. They let him go after 9 months. Yeah, a phase. Uh-huh. So they did actually diagnose him as borderline schizophrenic and deemed him safe to be in society. After failing to find a job, he enlisted in the army in 1959. And he starts to have weird dreams and fantasies and seeing things that just aren't there. You know, we all know, even though we're laymen, we're not doctors, as we always remind y'all, some of these are signs of schizophrenia. You know, seeing things that aren't there, fantasies, weird dreams. So
people talking to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, hearing things. So he ends up going to the army shrink. Okay. Well, the shrink doctor there decides, guess what? He's too disturbed to be in the army. So
of course he is. He's too disturbed to be on the street. I mean,
well,
you know.
In the words of Lieutenant Joe, well, my, Kim. So they just charge him. Okay, so where does he go? He goes back to live with his mommy. Oh, no. Well, she's less than thrilled, and she makes him sleep in the shed behind the house. Not even in the house, in the shed, right?
She's an evil witch.
She really is.
Of course, she might have been scared of him at this time because she'd been so hateful to him.
I don't know. I don't know. I can't speculate. Anyway, so he started right back up stealing underwear and ultimately beginning to assault women again, okay? So now, this time, he actually tried to kidnap a lady in broad daylight. And this lady, I did not find her name, but she was on her way back to her job from the telephone company. She'd been on lunch. Well, she resisted and fought back. And what ultimately happened was he choked her until she passed out. And when she fell to the ground, he just took her shoes and amscrayed, right?
Mm-hmm. He just wanted the shoes.
Well, you know, yeah. Yeah, maybe she was his size. They didn't say. So anyway, we can start to see a sort of pattern emerging here that his compulsion was getting worse, but the things he was using weren't satisfying him anymore. So he was needing more and more and starting again, like I say, to figure out what was going to do the trick for him, to blow up his skirt, as it were. So he actually got a license at the FCC and got a job at this local radio station, which I find curious. And while he's there, he's set up on a date with a 17-year-old girl by the name of Ralphine. Now, they also call her Darcy in other places. So if you see that, it's the same lady.
Okay.
So we need to note at this point, he's still a virgin.
And how old is he?
He's 22.
Okay.
So they really become smitten with each other, believe it or not. And they start doing the horizontal mambo and she gets pregnant. So in 1962, they get married. And almost immediately, all the gentle affection and romance that he'd shown her in the beginning while they were dating quickly changed as he becomes very demanding and controlling. And he makes her walk around naked in high heels at home, doing the housework, doing the cooking.
Oh, and
he also forbids her to enter into his workshop. Yeah, it always worries me when a man says, I've got a workshop. Really? Oh, God. So in this workshop, he built a dark room. Well, he also actually really fancied himself as an artist, as a fabulous photographer. So in his dark room, he's developing his X-rated pictures of Ralphine in some of the clothes that he had stolen. Of course, that's when he wasn't wearing the clothes himself. And with Ralphine, he was creating this captive that he'd always dreamed of and told the doctors about. Remember what his dreams were? So he's trying to make all his dreams come true. Somewhere over the rainbow. But she soon got tired of this. I mean, she was a young girl when they met and got married, but she's getting her fill and wising up. So she starts to stand up to him and pull away from him. Now, as we kind of know, most serial killers do not harm their family.
Right.
So he's not going to take any of this out on him. They usually take it out on someone else, including why he wouldn't have gone out and killed his mom. I mean, there are exceptions, but anyway. So he had to find something new to fulfill his fantasies because she wasn't ponying up anymore. At this time, he's also secretly taking to dressing in women's clothing under his work clothes.
Yeah, he likes to wear the panties and a bra.
So he starts to steal more clothing from women he's attracted to. And this continues to give him the sense that he is in control of women when they want him to be or not. Mm-hmm. So next, a chance meeting of a woman on the streets. He meets this lady, he follows her home, and he waits to creep inside her apartment because he wants to steal her clothes. That's really all he wants at this point. But he snuck in, and while he was doing this, she wakes up.
Not good.
So he jumps on the bed, he strangles her, and he rapes her. Now, raping this woman is another turning point in his psychopathic behavior.
He liked it.
Yeah, he's getting bolder, and he's getting braver, and he's full of confidence that he can't be caught because, look, he's been caught before for little bitty things. No one's ever done anything. And oh my God, he's so much smarter than the police. They'll never catch him, right?
It seems to be a recurring theme.
Oh, it is.
Picked up over and over and over and over again for other things. And oh, it is. Connect the dots.
It is. I mean, the more we talk about these really famous people and even not so famous people, they all do the same things. They all have the same pattern. If you watch and their family's been horrible to them, it all has to do with some sort of moment in time of their childhood that just crushes them one way or the other. So at this point, he's 28 years old. And guess what? He has two children. He's got two children with Ralphine by this time. So he appears to be the model citizen. Of course, don't they
all?
Of course
he does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. John Wayne Gacy.
Mm-hmm.
BTK.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, his wife is busy with raising her kids, so she has no time to indulge him in his fantasies anymore. So to get her attention, he starts to leave photos of himself around the house. Dressed in women's clothing.
In women's clothing.
High heels. Yeah. And you gotta love her. I really love her. What does she do? She ignores him.
Oh, there you go.
She just ignored him and went on about her business washing the dishes, you know, and making meatloaf, right? So this pushes him even further into his need to satisfy his fetishes. So on January the 26th, 1968, 19-year-old Linda Slauson was selling encyclopedias door to door. People used to do that back in the day. And encyclopedias were like old school Wikipedia for y'all who don't know.
And hopefully most people know what an encyclopedia is out there.
But poor girl, I can't imagine slapping him door to door. So she met him in the yard and he was all nice and charming and stuff. And so he lured her down into his basement. At that point, he had a basement. So when he gets her down there, he smashed her over the head with a 2x4.
Oh.
Just wax her, right? Well, the blow didn't kill her. So he finished the job by strangling her. Well, from there on, and this is another trait, from there, he casually went upstairs and gave his wife money to take the kids out for lunch.
Well, he disposed of the body.
Oh, he is not ready to dispose of the body.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Now, this would be his first actual kill. So he's really ticking off all the boxes of being a psychopath, okay? Mm-hmm. He is lacking any empathy. He has a sense of entitlement. He's narcissistic. Yeah, most serial killers are psychopaths. It's a personality disorder that allows them to actually commit a homicide. Because for him to go back and deal with his family in the house as if nothing happened, and now that he's got the family out of the house, right? Everything's cool. He's juggling his life. He is multitasking. Go Jerry. He comes back out to his garage / workshop and he starts to act out his sexual fantasies with Linda. Now she's dead, right? So.
Right, right.
He dresses her dead body in some of his stash of underwear and lingerie and high heels. And he starts to take lots and lots of pictures because remember, he's a fancy artist.
He's a photographer.
Yeah. Well, the next thing he does is he takes a hacksaw and he cuts off one of her feet.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Now, this is his first trophy.
He kept it?
Oh, yeah. He put it in the freezer, and he'd take it out now and then, and he'd put a high heel on it, on the severed foot, and he'd masturbate while he would look at his handiwork. Yep.
Well, that's frightening, actually. Is it funny? It's frightening, yeah.
Oh, it is. It is. We're not laughing. We're embellishing on the horrific parts of the story. I know it's really pretty awful. All she wanted to do was her little job. So with the rest of her body, he weighted that down with an engine motor and he drove out and tossed it into the Long Tom River. So the following day, Linda's family begin a frantic missing person search, but they get nowhere and the police get nowhere. So he's getting away, right?
Right.
So before he kills again, he moves his family to Salem, where he has a detached garage, which is perfect for his little twisted workshop of horrors, right?
Well, of course it is. Yeah.
So 10 months later, after the first murder, on November the 26th, 1968, Jerry meets Jan Whitney, as she's a 23-year-old college student at the University of Oregon. And he's on his way home from work. Now, his crimes have always been opportunistic. He doesn't actually like
hunt.
Yeah. Her car was stopped on the highway and he pulled over and told her that he'd fix her car. Well, okay. Good Samaritan, right? But first he had to go get some tools. Well, she was a little dubious, but they rode together to his home. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Not a good decision.
So once they got to his house, he goes in to get some stuff, but when he came back out to the car, he got in the back seat and he quickly whips this. They call it a postal strap. It was a leather strap. I guess it was on some sort of postal equipment. I don't know. He whips this leather strap around her neck, quickly opens the door and then slams it so that the strap was in the, you know, in between the door and the car and it could be real tight on her neck. So while she's choking and dying, he rapes her in front of the family in the car. He doesn't know if they're watching or not, but he's there, right? So he's taking more and more chances. So
it's more and more thrills. He needs to up the ante. Yeah.
But he's really more into sleeping with them after they're dead, not so much when they're alive. So even though he started out with rape in the beginning, he's liking the whole necrophilia thing. Yeah. And so he's doing this to her. And then what he did afterwards, he takes her out of the car, takes her into his workshop, and he hangs her from the ceiling. Now, he already has a little contraption built in there in order for him to do this. He kept her in there for 5 days and repeatedly assaulting and having sex with her corpse.
Oh, jeez.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is actually what is considered a lust killer. And this is why they call him a lust killer, is that they will kill and have sex with them after they're dead. That the necrophilia is actually a part of what they're into. It's a whole part right. of the description.
Right.
So the next day after he killed her, she's, you know, hanging there, he takes the family away for a long weekend and leaves Jan's body still hanging in the garage. Just leaves her. I mean, that's mm-hmm. confidence. I won't even leave the lights on. So while they're gone, someone accidentally smashes into the garage with their car.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? The police are called. They look over the damage and everything, but they never found Jan's body.
Oh, my goodness.
Never saw her. Yeah.
What the heck?
I know. So this close call with the police makes Jerry feel even more invincible.
Of course it does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I am God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course it mm-hmm. does.
So he soon gets tired of having sex with her rotting corpse, and so he dumps her body in the Willamette River. Now, on March 27th, 1969, he found 19-year-old Karen Sprinkler in the department store parking lot of Meyer and Frank. She was just a student coming to have lunch with her mom. Now, he grabs Karen and held a toy pistol on her and forced her into his car to take her back to his lair.
Mm-mm-mm.
But get this, he was actually in drag when he accosted this poor girl.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And other people saw it. So they described a man dressed in women's clothing when the police came.
Okay. So they noticed. Good.
Why are they not putting together, you know? So once they get back to his place, she's really trying to save her life. And so she's complying with whatever he asks, right? So he had her dress up and wore the lingerie and strip for him. And he took pictures in her high heels. But then to secure her, he tied her up to the ceiling, hoisting her up with a rope and a pulley type system. And he had constructed this thing to hang his victims, like I was telling y'all before. It's called a come-along ratchet. That's exactly mm-hmm. what it's called. And mm-hmm. I think they use that for wincing up really heavy things like motors and stuff like that. So anyway, he uses this to continue to ratchet her up tighter and tighter and hoisting her up off the floor just a few inches so that basically she's using the weight of her body to strangle, you know?
Oh, so he had it tied around her neck?
Yes.
Okay.
And guess what he did?
He raped her.
No.
No?
He went in the house and he had a sandwich.
Oh, jeez.
And watched cartoons while she's in the garage.
And she's dying. Because
struggling.
He didn't want it.
And yeah. dying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He didn't want anything to do with her till she was dead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we should take a break right here because there's more when he comes out that y'all are going to like really be, oh, gross. But so we will be back in one moment. Thanks, y'all, for coming back. And we are back to our Jerry Brudos. And he's finished his sandwich and his cartoons. And he's gone back out into the garage. And poor Karen is dead by now. So he has to have sex with the dead corpse. But wait, that's not enough. He needs another trophy, right?
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. So this time, he cuts her breasts off. He makes a cast out of them, and he attempts to make a bronze bust of her breasts. Well, after a while, when he'd had enough of her, He ties her body to an engine block and tosses her into the Long Tom River, his favorite place.
Mm-hmm. Seems like there should be some floaters happening by now, but I guess he's waiting them down enough.
Well, all this happens within the span of like a year or so. I don't know. On April the 21st, 1969, he attacks Sharon Wood. And I love it. I saw an interview with her on YouTube, and she's an older lady now, and she's talking about, I bit him in the thumb and he let me go.
Oh, gee.
I know.
So she got away. Good for her.
Yeah, she got away. Yeah. She bit him hard and drew blood and he let her go. Which I kind of love.
Good for her.
I know. So his next target, he's kind of trying to change it up a little bit, figuring out what works for him, but this isn't working. So his next target was a young girl of 12 years old called Gloria Smith. And she now, Gloria also got away from him. Well, now he's really becoming frantic for a victim, right? Mm-hmm. But this has also taught him that he needs to lure his victims rather than accost them. Yeah.
Right.
So he buys a fake security badge and uniform, and he starts to stake out the parking garage at the Lloyd Center Mall in Portland. And at the mall, he spots a 22-year-old by the name of Linda Saley. He confronts her with his badge, saying he's a security officer, and telling her that they have been having problems on the lot with shoplifting, and that she'd have to come down to the police station with him. Well, she was kind of reluctant, but she agreed. So she got into his car. Well, he takes her back to his workshop, right?
Of course he does.
So when they get there, oh, this is just too much. When they get there, he ties her up. And then what does he do? He casually goes inside to have dinner with the family.
While she's choking to death in the...
No. He tied her. He just tied her up. He didn't hang her yet.
Oh, okay.
He likes to make them dance around and strip and take pictures.
Yeah.
You know, before he actually kills them. So after dinner, he comes back out. And guess what? She's sitting there untied, Kim.
Why the heck didn't she leave?
The police think that she thought he was going to let her go. Well, what? I don't know. But so he grabs her, strips her again, ties her up again, and then he hoists her from the ceiling like he did Karen.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Tragic.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? So at this time, her feet are barely touching the ground, and he starts taking pictures of her while she's dying. Dead body. More sex.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Then after she dies and he gets tired of her, again, another engine block. Because, hey, it worked before. And, hey, Long Tom River again.
Evidently, but now, it's, you know.
Now, this wasn't the perfect murder to him because he didn't get a trophy off of her.
Well, I wonder why.
I'm going to tell you. He actually told police he didn't take her breasts because her breasts were too pink and she had no... quote, ring around the nipple, and he didn't like that. And now I'm sure he means her areola, right?
Yeah, that's what she, that's
right,
what
but he said. Didn't use that word, you know. She was too pink. So okay. At this point, he really believed no one could catch him, and he's only 30 years old. So imagine if they never caught him. So meanwhile, the police aren't getting anywhere until on May the 10th, 1969, a local fisherman discovered a body floating in the Long Tom River. Well, that body turned out to be Linda Saley. From there, 2 days later, they continued to drag the river and found the body of Karen Sprinkler. The police discover an unusual knot that was used to tie the ropes that held the victims down. And the top of knot that was used was a sort of an odd loop that electricians use when they're pulling wire through houses.
Yeah.
Remember, he's an electrician.
Yeah.
So as they're looking through local files, they go back to the school where Linda went. And after interviewing hundreds of girls to see if they dated or seen anybody odd, only one of the girls had an encounter with a man who was wandering around the dormitories saying he was a Vietnam vet and he was lonely and, you know, he wanted some companionship or, you know, trying to sweet talk these girls. She said he also wouldn't stop talking about these missing bodies and the women on the news, the dead bodies.
Right.
She really found this was creepy and agreed to help. Yeah.
Smart girl.
Yeah. So she agreed to help the police lure him into a trap. And the police said, hey, you know, when he contacts you again, call us and we'll set up a sting, basically. And that's what they did. And the police caught him. They didn't exactly have anything to hold him on just yet, right? So the police discovered that he'd worked as an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
Then the police began to learn of his hospitalization for attacks on teenage girls, right?
Uh-oh, yeah.
Right. So they don't exactly have a warrant or a search warrant, but they go to his home and they start talking to him. And he actually lets them in. And they see in his little workshop, believe it or not, rope. And they're spying the rope. And he says, hey, you know, you're really looking at that rope. You want some of it? And the detective's like, wow, yeah. Yeah. So he cuts some rope off and he gives them to the police. So lo and behold, that rope, I guess he thought it was a magic rope, but it wasn't, because it eventually directed him all the way back to the murders, right?
Of course it did.
Of course. So even though Jerry was being calm about the police investigating him, he was on the outside, he was kind of nervous on the inside. So he contacted an attorney, and this man's by the name of Dale Drake. He advised him, if he really was guilty, to not allow the police to search the house.
Right.
That the police were having a hard time finding anything to really arrest him for. So just, you know, chill and don't.
Shut up, dude.
Yeah, exactly. So they went back to the little 12-year-old girl that got away from him, Gloria, remember? And they did the same thing that you were talking about before. They couldn't show her a lineup of people, but they showed her a bunch of pictures. And she picked him out and described him exactly. Good. She even kind of embellished a few things. Yeah, because she noted, well, that looks like him, but he really had a lot of freckles, which he did. You know? So the police, with that in their back pocket, they can kind of like, they can finally go and arrest him at least for kidnapping while they try to hang the rest of it on him. And then they get a search warrant, right? On May the 30th in 1969, the police catch him and his family heading for the border of Canada.
Of course they are.
Mm-hmm. So they pull him over, and he was hiding under a blanket in the back seat. Oh, big man, huh?
Well, I can't figure out his wife putting up with this. Evidently, she knows what's going on, or something's going on with him. You know, she's hiding him in the back seat.
She's, you know, I saw that. I saw the different forensics psychiatrists, psychologists talking about that. And, you know, they were just commenting that sometimes it's easier just to not address it. And especially, you know, to go along to get along, you know?
Right.
And also, remember, this is the 60s. She probably had very little chance of any hope of a life. And she had two children. So, you know, but we'll get to her in just a second because there's more about her. Anyway, so they pull him over. He's hiding under her blanket in the back seat. And he's wearing ladies' silk panties.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So he cops a real cold demeanor and no remorse. He calls up his attorney and he confessed all his crimes to him, just matter-of-factly, that he enjoyed killing and mutilating the bodies, that this was a thrill to him and he had no feelings about them at all, that he described the women as candy wrappers.
Oh.
And once you were done with them, you just throw them away. Why wouldn't you? You're done.
Wow.
So remember what we said? He kept claiming he had an IQ of 165. So the detective who was on the situation, his name is Jim Stovall. He decided to play it, you know, kind of fatherly to him because our Jerry never had a father, remember? So he came at him with that angle, and that made him want to impress Detective Stovall. So ultimately, he started describing great gory detail, each of the killings, and even some other things that the police had wondered about, like there were burn marks on Linda's rib cage. And what he had done, what Jerry had done, was put these nails on each side of her rib cage. And then he hooked up like an electrical, I think it sounded like jumper cables to me.
Right.
And then he would.
Just to torture her.
Yeah. And to see if she'd jump like a frog. So he flat out stated that the women he'd slaughtered were nothing more than objects to him, and he just had no conscience and no remorse. And with his confession on June the 3rd in 1969, they began to search his workshop. And they just found evidence everywhere. All of these lingerie and underwear and panties and body parts. And, you know, pictures of all the dead women specifically were taped to the drawers of a red Craftsman tool chest. On these pictures, the ladies were in various states of dress or undress for the most part. Some were alive and some were in the process of dying or actually finally dead. And in one of the pictures, he was so absorbed in what he was doing that he had caught himself in the picture.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. He'd put a mirror up underneath one of the girls while she was hanging there so that they could see her vagina, right? And in the process of him taking the picture, he caught his reflection in the picture that he took.
Good.
You gotta love that, don't you?
Genius.
Uh-huh. Yeah, genius is right. In the house, they found the paperweights of Karen Sprinkler's breasts, and he'd made several paperweights, but they were on the mantle in pride of place.
Mm.
I mean, what can
his wife just looking at him? I mean, maybe she was afraid that he would do her in if she said anything, or do the whole family in. I don't know, but.
I don't know.
I think
maybe
I'd have been getting the hell out of Dodge.
I don't think she knew he was killing people. I don't know, but she's got to wonder because you know was keeping his life so compartmentalized. You know, so
right.
They also found Jan Whitney's car keys, and at this point, they had evidence to charge him with 3 counts of murder. There were a total of 7 evaluations done on him by psychiatrists. Because at this point, his lawyer knows that the only defense that they can use is criminally insane. Well, guess what? They all come back not criminally insane.
Good. He's a genius.
Exactly. So he is definitely, most definitely charged with 3 counts of murder and he pleads to everything.
Yeah. Well, he wanted to be known for it.
Yep. He pleads guilty to everything. He's sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences because there's no death penalty in Oregon at the time, or I don't know if there is now, but there definitely wasn't then. They also charge his wife, Ralphine. Remember her?
Yeah.
So she was charged as an accomplice, but she was found not guilty. So, you know, anyway, so she terminated his parental rights, changed her name and moved away, got the hell out of Dodge.
Good for her. She should have done it years before.
I know. But he apparently never hurt her more than just a little weirdness. But one of the things I find super strange is that while he was in prison, they allowed him to order women's catalogs and shoe catalogs. Girl, that's his flat out porn. That's his fetish. Why would they let him do that? They won't let people have porn. Why would they give him that? You know?
Yeah, who knows?
So anyway.
You got to be humane. Let him see his patent leather pumps and
But they draws. Knew that's what he was doing with them. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. So he had a lot of trouble in prison. He was picked on some more, a whole lot more. And someone hit him in the head with a bucket of water and this inmates beat him constantly and then
boo-hoo.
Yeah. By January 1970, he's treated for rectal bleeding and was classified as being caused by hemorrhoids or quote unquote other. We all know what other means.
We all know what the other was, yeah.
Anyway, he became the longest living inmate in the Oregon penitentiary and he died of liver cancer on March the 29th, 2006, kind of recently. And he was 67 years old.
Wow.
So that is our foot fetish, shoe fetish weirdo for the day.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot more of them out there.
There sure are. I'm sorry I didn't have a lot more guts and gore for y'all.
It was guts and gore enough. I mean, you know, he cut off their boobs and made paperweights, so
I just feel like y'all's imagination could probably run with you, and you know, at that time they didn't always detail too much either. They just were very vague about certain things. But that is Jerome Jerry Brudos, the lust killer.
Wow. Okay, well, thanks bunches for that one. I won't have any nightmares or anything.
Happy New Year and all that, right?
All right. Happy New Year. And Happy New Year, everybody. And Happy thanks for New listening Year. To us again. And we hope 2021 treats everybody better than 2020 did. So.
Yep, we pray y'all stay safe and come back and see us, because in this very month of January, we do have our new show coming out. It's going to be on paranormal and all other creepy, deepy, weird things that we want to talk about. So
it's next month.
Oh, is it?
That's okay.
It's in January,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, this won't be aired in January.
Lark's such a goober. So
this will be aired on December 29th, y'all. So,
well, whatever.
All right. In January, well, we have a new podcast coming, and it's called Two Chicks and a Crucifix. So,
Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
So if you guys like paranormal. And you like us, and we hope you do, because you're listening to us.
And if y'all want to send Lark a calendar so she can keep her stuff straight.
Math is hard.
Math is hard.
You guys come back and see us in the new year, and we wish y'all a safe and happy New Year's Eve. Don't drink too much. Don't drive. And be safe.
Thanks, everybody.
Love you guys.
Love y'all. Bye-bye. Don't bury the bodies without us. Bye.
That's our episode for this week. Thanks for listening to us, and we hope you join us again every Tuesday for an exciting new episode.
Head on over to our blog at kudzukillerspodcast.blogspot.com and leave a comment or your ideas about the subject this week.
Or follow us on Twitter at kudzukillerspod, and you can shout out to us anytime or send a question for our next Q&A.
Yes, ma'am. And we love you forever. If you leave us a review on whatever podcast blows your spirit up, we'd love to hear what you think of our new show.
If you'd like to become a part of the Kudzu Killers family, hop on over to patreon.com/Kudzu Killers Podcast and take a look at the goodies you get when you show us some love.
That's right. And if you love our music, check out Jody Jennings Music on Facebook, SoundCloud, or all social media and streaming music platforms.
So until next week,
or if we decide to shoot out a mini episode,
bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.